Kathy Aldridge, women's editor of the New York Amsterdam News.
I'm Nanny Kringle, women's page reporter for the New York Times. Kathy, I see your name all over the front page as well as the women's page. Do you only cover women's subjects for the Amsterdam News?
No, I cover other subjects, politics and personalities, special events, special occasions, and anything that comes up that I might have some special knowledge about, I might find myself writing it for the front page.
Well, is that just if you have extra time from the women's subjects? Or?
No, that's included as part of the entire shebang, really.
Well, you can cover anything you like?
Pretty much so, but it's sticking mainly to my supervision of 5 to 10 pages of the women's section of the Amsterdam News. Tell me about your page. Do you do one page or more than one or special assignments or just what?
We just have one page, but as you know, since Charlotte Curtis has been the editor, we've broadened the scope tremendously so that, for one thing, reporters can cover any subject. I used to only cover food, which got pretty fattening, and now I can cover children, families, home furnishings, and we've really pushed the scope out very nicely, and it... I even get up into Harlem occasionally and do stories.
Yes, I've seen
which I
you
love to
there.
Do.
I was wondering. I get downtown to do stories quite often, too. You know. And do you find a problem making an arbitrary decision of all the many events and things that happen in the women's field?
Well, you are your own editor, right?
Yes, I am.
You see, I have an editor and an assistant editor and a desk who, you know, that's their problem. Thank goodness.
In other words, you don't create your own assignments.
Well, yes, I do some of them, quite a lot of them, in fact, but I always go to the editor, and, you know, she passes judgment on whether she thinks it's great or terrible or to be done sometime when there's nothing better happening.
Yeah.
Tell me, how did you get into this mad business to begin with?
Well, Nan, it's a short but, I think, fairly interesting story for me. As I was growing up in Louisville, Kentucky, I went to a segregated high school, and all black girls who were middle class, so to speak, were supposed to become school teachers or social workers, but my family thought that I should have been a concert pianist. And I took music lessons for 16 years, and I took violin, I took voice. But I didn't want to go into the music field after I was 16 because I discovered boys, and I liked to talk on the telephone rather than practice. So I decided that I'd listen to my father, and he said law, medicine, or school teaching. And that junior year in my high school, they offered a course in journalism, and I took it as an elective, and that was it.
You mean the bug bit?
It really did, very fast. Yeah. And I went up from a reporter in the 11th grade to editor-in-chief in the 12th grade, and from then on, I knew that the only thing I'd ever want to do was work in communications, and that's where I've been pretty much ever since, with the exception of about a couple of years teaching school here in New York City after I married and had a child.
How did you get onto the Amsterdam News? Is it difficult, or...?
That's also rather interesting. I had worked for Howard Samuels, who was running for governor against Nelson Rockefeller in 62, I believe. And I wanted a job that was interesting, adult, and I could smoke. I could have coffee breaks and something that was kind of stupid. Because I was going to school, working on a master's at Hunter College in psychology. And I was tired of the cases, and I was just tired of the whole elementary school routine. So I called a friend of mine, asked him about if he knew anything, and he was at one of the television stations, not this one, unfortunately, and he suggested that this particular position was open with Howard Samuels. So I got it, and I turned out to be his assistant press secretary. He did not have too many connections in the Harlem community, and these I managed to conjure up for him, and as a result, I went up from secretary, so to speak, in the press relations department to assistant press secretary. And from there, I made connections with the Amsterdam News, with friends I knew on the publication, and the vacancy occurred, and they asked me to take it, so I did.
How long ago was that?
That was 6 years ago, almost to the day, January 4th, 1964.
Mm-hmm.
How about yourself, Nan?
Like everything in my life, it was more or less an accident. I grew up loving horses in England, and I found my family couldn't afford to keep me in horses, so I came over here. I took a secretarial course, and I took a job as secretary to Craig Claiborne on the Times. And Craig was really rather marvelous. He encouraged me a great deal to write, and before I knew it, I was a reporter instead. I'm sure if I'd probably tried this, it would never have worked, but I was so dumb it never occurred to me I could do it, and before I knew what had happened, I was doing it. And so I started out in food, and then when Charlotte came, went on to other subjects, which I liked a great deal more.
Now, you mentioned food. My first professional job in journalism was in the food field as well. I worked for the Chicago Defender as the assistant in the Home Service Department. And I worked a lot with food, and I really am not the best cook, especially 5 days a week, and it's always been this way. So I had to do an awful lot of reading and research, and they wanted to start a test kitchen, and that's when I decided no, because I'm not geared toward that particular segment of creating news.
Well, how do you have... You have children, you said?
Yes, I have one daughter.
How do you manage with her when you go to work?
Well, she's in junior high school.
Oh.
She's 15.
Oh.
And,
You look so young, I can't believe that.
Well, thank you.
See, I was smart. I started late. Mine's only three.
Well, how do you manage with a child?
It's hell. It really is. Yeah. I have to take her all the way up to... I live on the Lower East Side, and I take her up to the Upper West Side, because the school there is one of the very few that have a program for working mothers, and I can leave her from 8 to 6.
Good. So, do you do this every morning?
Every morning and every night.
Yeah. Do you find that you spend a fair amount of time with her, but it's more meaningful to you rather than being if you were home all day, for example?
I don't know. I don't know the difference. I mean, I've never been home, so I don't know what it would be like to be home all day with her. I think as an only child, she needs to go to school, that's for sure. Maybe not from 8 to 6, but I think she needs a school desperately, not just to be with her old mother all the time. But we do have a lot of fun, and maybe if I were home with her all day, I wouldn't feel like it. I don't know. What do you think about that?
I don't know, Nan. I've pretty much worked ever since Allison was about a year old. And, of course, I had my mother, who is now deceased, but that's another story. But I had my mother in the home, and she would come over every day and would be with her. But even so, I had nursery school for her in addition. And, of course, teaching school was not quite so bad because I was home like 3
same,
o'clock.
Same
I lived right across the street from the school, and I was home in about 5 minutes. So I did manage to spend all of the afternoon, the late afternoon, until bedtime to be with her. But now that she's 15 years of age, it's quite a difference because she has her own activities. And she takes music lessons and art lessons, and she's quite a busy little girl. And she's often including me in her life.
Is she going to take up the musical career that you didn't take up, do you think?
Well, I think she's discovered boys, too, and the telephone, so...
I don't know why they're mutually exclusive, boys and music, but...
I don't know. There must be some tie, and we haven't been able to find that. But she paints quite a bit. She is always at the canvas and is constantly buying art supplies to keep her involved in this, and she loves it very much. Well, tell me, Nan, do you have any special ambitions and or goals? Do you want to stay there where you are or move on?
I have made a golden rule ever since I lost my husband that I live one day at a time. That's just, when I think of one day, that's enough. I can't cope with thinking any further ahead. In a way, I look forward to the days when Sharon, my daughter, is a little older, and I can concentrate a little more on going out and socializing, because you get a lot of stories this way, and I'm well aware that being in my little ivory tower, I'm probably missing a lot that's going on. But apart from that, I really can't think about the future. What about you?
Well, I haven't thought too much about it. I've been wondering how long I want to stay in the women's field, because it is very time-consuming as far as the social activities are concerned, because in addition to planning features and working with my own repertorial assignments, I find that I have to write a column, which I love dearly, but sometimes it can be pure, you know, satanic, for the use of a nicer word, to sit down and write up all these little things that happen in the social field and plan for features, because I am the only person in my department. I am the food editor, the fashions editor, the home furnishings editor.
Oh, I think
editor.
How many we have in ours.
Well, at least you can
have a space that way. You get lots of bylines. We practically fight to get on the page at our place because there are so many people.
Well,
coming.
I keep my byline off a great many things because it looks ridiculous. You know, Kathy Aldridge, Kathy Aldridge, Kathy Aldridge, you know, all over the place. So at times I do have some outside help. I'll hire someone who is going to convention, say the National Council of Negro Women, and ask them to cover for me, and they'll get paid and this type of thing. So I don't have to do everything that comes along, because this is, you know, Harlem is such a vibrant community.
It certainly is. Yes.
There are over 2,000 clubs and organizations in Manhattan alone. Did you know that?
No. Well, I know the biggest compliment anyone can pay me when I'm up in Harlem is that, do you know, the Amsterdam News hasn't gotten onto this story yet? And I think that's a wonderful compliment to me.
Oh, I don't like that at all.
Well, have you ever figured out about how many hours you spend a week?
Yes, I spend close to 80 hours each week. And a new shift starts on the weekend. I don't know. Do you work on the weekends at all?
No. No, we're Monday.
Well, you're very fortunate. Mm-hmm. I have outside assignments. I have to cover things of the big balls that take place on the weekends and the big parties and the weddings and the dances and this type of thing.
Of course, and you don't get overtime for any of this, of course.
Yes, I am well compensated for it.
Oh, well, that's something. But
yeah. Not we do have the American Newspaper Guild, you know.
Yes, but I didn't know whether as an editor you've got compensation.
Well, I am.
You know, if you get lofty enough, you don't anymore.
Well, you're a member of the Guild, are you?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I am too. And this was something that took place before I went to the Amsterdam News. The position had not been a Guild position in the beginning, but the last dear friend of mine who had it was not a member of the Guild, but the Guild decided to make this into a Guild position. And how they managed to sneak it through, I don't know, but they did. And I've been rather pleased that it was a member of the Guild position. It was a Guild position.
Well, I hope you're still pleased come April 1st.
Yeah, I know.
The contract comes up.
Yes, our starts.
Well, you're the same. I mean, it's the New York Newspaper Guild, right? So we're all in the same boat as of that day.
We had a strike 2 years ago.
Oh, did you?
And a number of the reporters from the Times and Newsweek, Time and Life came up and marched on the picket line with us.
I'd forgotten about that. There seem to be so many strikes. One has a job keeping them up with them all. Were you out for long?
We were out 2 months. And when I think the Times was on the strike, we went down and marched on the picket line with you.
Oh, did you?
I found it great rousing fun, you know.
Well, I found it even more than that. I met my husband on the picket line.
Oh,
so
funny.
We'd both worked for the Times for 10 years and only met on the picket line.
Great.
In a way, strikes aren't all bad, I guess.
So all the young ladies who write in say, where can I go to meet men?
Yes, get on the picket line somewhere.
Now, you receive, bringing up correspondence, do you receive many letters from your readers?
Quite a lot. I never quite know what triggers a great deal of response. I've done a couple of stories on daycare centers that have triggered a great deal of response. And then I do another story, or something like what it's like to have your husband missing in Vietnam, and no response at all, except for odd people who call up and say, you know, that's a nice story. Now, what about this idea? There's no knowing. It's very strange. What about you?
I find the same thing. I went to Brazil last year and covered the carnival in Rio de Janeiro, and I wrote a 7-part series. And I didn't think anyone would find this too interesting, because how many Americans, not necessarily Harlemites, have a chance to go to Brazil? You know, and oddly enough, this series received an overwhelming response. I was quite shocked, and when the series ended, people wrote up and said, well, please write some more. You know, and yet there were other things, such as you mentioned daycare centers. I remember some other features. I had one on the points of view of Negro women and how they react to the world situation, this type of thing. And very few people, you know, responded to this. But
that's
they
strange. You think people would start arguing with it or something anyway.
Yeah. It's funny.
It reminds me that when I was doing a story, my husband and I had a horse and caravan in Ireland, and I wrote a story on it, and Holiday heard about it, and the editor submitted it to his editor or whatever, and they said, oh, no, we don't want that because it's too middle class. People either want to read about the beautiful people or about something they can never do themselves. They want to live vicariously. And I didn't believe that, but maybe that's what it was with your readers in
Newark. I think
story.
There's a lot of truth in this.
That's very interesting.
And that sometimes I receive letters which say, oh, you're only interested in the middle class, or you're only interested in the masses, you know, and you can't please everyone. You try to present a little bit for the people who are involved in fashion or in food and who are middle class, who are with the lodges and the benevolent associations. You try to give a little bit of something for everyone each week, and it's not always easy, but when features come about and they're reading something that is not about themselves, you know, and they respond to something like Brazil, makes you really wonder, you know, shouldn't we do more of this type of reporting as well? And they're especially interested in my observations on the the black people in Brazil and the whole racial situation and how I found myself. I was almost arrested, and a lot of interesting things happened over there because they were not used to a black American woman journalist coming in with press credentials and writing, you know, so it presented quite a few interesting little problems.
You were allowed to bring yourself into your stories, are you?
Well, in this one I did, because it was a, you know, Kathy's rendezvous with life in South America. Rio, I forget.
Do you think this adds interest, this personal touch?
But we are basically, and first and foremost, a community newspaper, and this is what our readers like. They like to see how I took part in something. What did I think? And speaking of the wires, the POW wires who went to Paris, so many of my readers wonder, well, Kathy, why didn't you go? We'd like to know what you thought about this.
Well, you don't have a husband missing in Vietnam.
No, but they'd like to know exactly what happens, how many Negroes are over there, how many Negro wives are in Cambodia. There are lots of stories which we can't begin to touch because, first of all, I'm only one person. We don't have quite the staff to do all of this. But there's a great interest in the international situation as far as women are concerned.
But mostly black women.
Yeah, mostly black women, because women do travel. They go all over the world now. There are lots of groups going here and there, and but they want to know what I think about it, which I think is quite a compliment, really.
Do you do very much on white women, or do you really stick pretty much to your own?
Oh, I mix it all up. Chinese, Italians, anybody who's doing anything. And it's interesting to the readers. I put it all in. Because I do not believe, I think I write from a black perspective, but I also think that the black perspective has to include a recognition and an acceptance of the fact that we live in one world together.
Mm.
And all of us are doing some of the same things in a parallel situation, you know.
Yes, I think it's pretty sad when we, you know, we have papers for black people and papers for white people and stories for black people and stories for white people.
Well, we are a community newspaper. And this is one other thing. I noticed the Times is very objective. Do you find that you are ever drawn personally into any story or situation?
Oh, of course. How can you help it?
Well, do you...
I mean, one gets... You mean emotionally?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yes, you get terribly emotionally involved. In fact, it's sort of a bit difficult. I did a story on the West 80th Street Daycare Center. I'm sure you probably read about
them. Yes,
they've had a lot of publicity.
Right, right.
And I got so involved with that story because there was so much on either side. They wanted to do it their way, and the Bureau of Child Welfare didn't want to give them the money unless they did it their way, and they couldn't come to terms. And I got so involved with all this. And Dorothy Pittman, who runs it, I think thought that I was going to go on from there and do all sorts of things for her. But when I've done a story, I can't do anymore. And I feel very guilty, but there's no chance in my private life to do anything. I've got too much to do there. And it's sort of sad in a way, because I think people feel a little let down. They don't understand your situation. That you do feel tremendously for them at the time. But what else can you do? You know, you do your story and... That's it, more or less.
That's an interesting thing. I've always heard that the reporters on the dailies have absolutely no social conscience, but I see that isn't quite true. I have the same situation because people think I should do more. You become automatically a sort of a semi-leader, in a sense. Many groups and organizations want you to follow up and do more with your resources and your contacts and help out because many of these people do operate in a vacuum. Which is unfortunate, and they do not have the sophisticated resources which we have available to us. And they definitely want you to come and speak, give them a plan, help them out. So it's constant people coming to the house and talking and, you know, well, what can we do, how can we do it, and where do we go from here, and what can you do to help?
Well, there's another problem, too. I mean, to go back to this daycare center, there are 1,000 other daycare centers who are trying to do what she's doing, and there are 1,000 other problems that you get involved in. You can't fragment yourself, and you shouldn't. I think you are there to report and hope something happens as a result of your story. And if it does do some good, boy, that makes it wonderful.
As long as you can arouse people to help someone, I think it's that's as much as a reporter can do.
But it's unfortunately, by very nature of a newspaper, it's rather a short-term arousal. You know,
yes.
It's yesterday's news,
yes.
Is good for wrapping up fish and chips, as they say. And so from that standpoint, people get very excited for a few weeks, and then it all dies down. Well, then they want something else, and there's really nothing else you can do. They have to take it from there.
Another thing, Nan, because like I'm asking questions and then I forget what I want to say to you, I wondered how the Times reported such a vast amount of fashion coverage. I would love to go to cover the collection in both Paris and Rome. I'd love it.
Oh, I think it'd be a terrible rat race. I would hate it.
Well, don't you enjoy a rat race once in a while? I do.
Not that sort of rat race. Yeah, I guess I'm just not interested enough in that much fashion. Or maybe I've heard of too many girls
who just try
nearly killed themselves doing it.
Well, I've covered two inaugurations, and that's a rat race, too, keeping up with all of the activities that go on. Of course, I'm trying to look for Negroes, you know, for black people at all the inaugurations to find out who they are, where they are from, and how are they invited, you know, why they're there. What possible connection do they have with administration, this type of thing. So I find it very exciting. And when Johnson was inaugurated, I joined the White House press pool at the very last minute, a real fluke, and there I was right up with the president,
wonderful.
Asking him questions and, wondering why he was going to dance on that crowded dance floor. You know.
I think one of the reasons I've always loved to write, but I never thought I would become a reporter, because I'm scared of competition, and I don't like having to compete with a lot of other people. I like to go off quietly and be doing a story all by myself that nobody else is doing. I would get terrified if there were... I have covered stories where you're competing with television and all the rest of it, but I much prefer to go off quietly and do the stories by myself than to...
When it comes to features, Nan, that's how I like to write a feature. I like to go out and do my investigation and come back, do my research, put it all together, and then go in a quiet room and write it. But when I'm going out on an assignment, that's when I like to tackle with the boys in the business, you know. I enjoy this end of it, and in fact, much more than lets on, I suppose, because I sort of come alive when I get out with the news people and dig after a story. I enjoy this very much.
Well, I guess I'm essentially
like
a feature writer. I must admit, if I get involved, then I find it very, very stimulating, but the thought of it terrifies me, and I have sleepless nights and wake up, you know, having dreamed I've missed the assignment and this sort of thing. It takes rather a toll. Maybe if I was doing it all the time, it wouldn't upset me so much, but I like to get down and have a real one-to-one conversation with somebody. These Vietnam women whose husbands are missing in Vietnam, I was the one who kept breaking down and crying, which is rather hysterical. They were much braver than I was. But to get down and really find out how people feel about things, to get them, you know, they have this initial resistance, mm-hmm. and they don't want to talk about it. I mean, you know, a stranger asking all these questions. And to gradually see this melt and have them tell you how they really feel and gain a little insight into what it is like, this to me is absolutely fascinating. And this is what I like. I don't like this rat race, where to me you're dealing with superficial things. You know, I'm much more interested in what makes people tick and, you know, how they feel about things. Just an ordinary person. And that's why I love this business, because I suppose probably a lot of reporters are shy, and this is a great excuse to go in and ask questions that you wouldn't normally dare to ask of somebody you met socially.
Well, I think it's a natural curiosity a person has which leads them into this field. I'm very curious about people in depth as well, and I do this. But there are also times when I do like to go to the rat races and really plug away at what's going on for my particular publication. And very often I have to work a little bit differently from the average daily, because I've got to make an inauguration, say, meaningful to my readership.
Mm.
And I could do this with Johnson's inauguration, for example, but I really had to work at the Nixon inauguration because there were not that many black people there. So I really had to work very hard and move around quite a bit. In other words, the news didn't fall into my lap.
Uh-huh. Of course, you do have a narrowed scope there, though, if you're looking for black people who are there.
And then,
at least you know what you're after. You have
right, then you begin to probe, too. There's a jumping-off spot, for example. You wonder, you know, why are they there? What led them into politics? You know, what are they going to get out of it? How can they apply this to the many problems that black people have? And is this going to be a key person in the future who's going to assume a certain conceivable role as to be able to put forth some particular programs for administrative or federal programs for black people? So you wonder, maybe this is someone who's going to be very important or not, you know. So it's
Well, then again, you are not just covering the news, which is what I think is so superficial.
Well, I can't
just
cover the news.
You're going below.
I have to do this because we are, first of all, a weekly.
Yes.
And in order to do something that the Times is not doing, we have to give it a new interpretive or a different angle, so that our people, our readers, so to speak, will find something valid in an inauguration of a president.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So that's almost halfway between feature and...
Yeah, right.
And
so we do a lot of featurizing of straight news in order to make
I think that's fascinating.
Meaningful. But to us, this, to me, is hard news.
Mm-hmm. The Times isn't covering a great deal of what you are covering.
Well, I don't think that the Times covers enough of things in Italian neighborhoods. Or in Yugoslavian neighborhoods, for example. I was reading the drama section yesterday of the Times, and there was a letter from one of the readers who had been to see one of the concerts, the student string ensemble concerts at Lincoln Center, I believe, and he chastised the Times in a very nice, polite way for not listing the names of all the students around New York and its environs who had taken part in this magnificent, wonderful display of music. And this is something that the Times is unable to do, and I'm sure there are numerous things that take place around the city that the Times cannot possibly cover. But I think whether or not there would be a New York Times or an Amsterdam News as the leading newspaper, there would still be room for a community newspaper.
Yes, that's what you said before, it's a community newspaper, and there should be community newspapers.
But unfortunately, it's the system...
Like the Village Voice or...
Right,
whatever.
It's the system or the structure of what has taken place and has shaped these particular forces that makes us a black newspaper, so to speak. But suppose they had Chinese living in Chinatown. They have their own newspapers, and the Jewish Daily Forward, and we are the Amsterdam News.
You have been listening to Analog, a radio series we present in cooperation with the National Conference of Christians and Jews. Our guests today were Kathy Aldridge, woman's editor of the Amsterdam News, and Nan Ickeringill, woman's page reporter for the New York Times. On each of these analog broadcasts, we have asked the participants to share something with us that has guided them and might be considered food for thought. Today, Nan Ickeringill told us, despite the fact she knows it sounds hackneyed, she still thinks the most important thing in the world is to do as you would be done by. And Kathy Aldridge said, her personal philosophy is to try to make a contribution to black journalism generally and to the Amsterdam News specifically. Fred Facey speaking. This recorded program, produced by Rhoda Grady and directed by Jeffrey Culliver, has been an NBC Public Affairs presentation.